Welcome to another edition of Friends in the Business with me, Jennifer English, brought to you by the 49ers Golf and Country Club and the fabulous Rincon Mountain Grill. Welcome to another edition of Friends in the Business with Jennifer English. I'm Jennifer English, and I am so happy to be welcoming you to 2020. It's a new year, it's a new decade, and we're all thinking about how we can enhance our lives, make our businesses better, deliver more value. One of the themes I wrote about in one of the trend prediction stories I had published at the tail end of 2019 was a story about how, among other things, we're all going to be trying to do better in the new year and in the new decade, better in all its forms. Better means better, as in, I've got to get better. Or are you getting better? If you've been a little bit under the weather, I hope you get better. It's an enhanced health and wellness message. It's an enhanced ingredients message. If you're a chef, you're going to be trying to make everything you make taste better. You're going to be making everything better in the form of starting with better ingredients, better raw materials, better recipes, better practices. We're all going to be applying this notion of better in all we do. If you're a musician, you're going to do everything you can to enhance the sound of the music you make. You're going to make that moment better. You're going to make the music better. You're going to deliver it in a more efficient way, in a more delicious sounding way. If you grow things or make things or do things, 2020 is the year of better. And I am going to use that as our launching pad theme today, because better means that we're going to start with the most essential form of better, and that's our wellness. Today, I have two extraordinary guests who are indeed friends of mine in the business that they're in here in Tucson, Arizona. And they both have a similar story, a story we share, and it's a story on which our journey attempts to get us all a little bit better, and we're here sharing it in the hopes that we can help you get on the path to better in the new year and the new decade as well. My guests today are two dear friends. My first guest is Buck Garrett. I've known him a shorter amount of time, but we have a very deep connection and bond. He is someone who makes extraordinary music. He's been on many of my radio shows over the years, and he produces products that are enhancing in the hopes that your life will feel better. And he grows and makes extraordinary hemp products in Tucson, Arizona, and creates a pain salve called Green Goo that is becoming essential for people in pain and at the farmers markets where he meets his customers and his new friends. They have many stories to tell. And he's got a very similar story to me and my first guest today. Chef Richard Tarrin is someone who, if you've been in this town a long time, you've eaten his food. You may not know you've eaten his food, but you've eaten his food. And chances are pretty good that if you've eaten his food, you've loved his food and his hospitality. We're going to have him tell you where he's worked and what he's done over the years. But the common thread in the theme of today's show of better, getting better, healing and wellness, finds its origins in this idea that food is our first medicine. But it's also possible that in some cases, if you're not careful, your food can in fact get you sick first. And what happens once you wake up to the fact that you are sick today? What do you do differently to make yourself better? And the theme of tying us all together is that we are survivors of cancer. And so while this isn't a cancer show and it's not a surviving cancer show, and we're not going to necessarily give you techniques and tactics and names and doctors and medicines and things, we're going to share that with you because as a foundational basis for everything we talk about today, it is the only thing you really need to know. It's that we are enormously grateful and living in our second chance and delighted to have you here with us to get to do that. So let's start off by saying hi to my guests, and in particular, Chef, we're going to start with you. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here. And I've known you for a long time, and I've been in the scene. You've been in the scene. And to pull this full circle tells me that I'm on the right path to my healing. You meet people throughout the world. A lot of people you don't meet. And there's reasons why you do meet people, and there's a reason why I met you.
There's no accidents.
No, no. It's a crossing. It's awesome to be here and to have a forum to talk about these things, because you know when you hear the C word.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when? How recently did you get diagnosed? Tell us a little bit about your story.
All right. Well, I was diagnosed in 2016. I had a sarcoma tumor in my nasal cavity, which, according to the doctors at Banner University, it was one of the rarest head and neck cancers they've seen in the country.
Wow.
It was a tough bite to take. It was a long struggle through chemo and radiation. My faith played a big part of it, I'll tell you that.
Did it hurt? How'd you find it?
I had a bump on the inside of my left eye. I thought it was a plugged tear duct. So I did the traditional things, take a bag of rice and heat it up in the microwave and try to soothe it. And then one day one of my sous chef said to me, you know, chef, you need to go get that checked. It's looking pretty bad. And I went and I was diagnosed.
Wow.
And the pain itself through all that was tough enough, but the mental part of it as well, not only what it does to yourself, but what it does to your family and friends, it's a tough fight. And it takes a lot of factors to be able to fall into place to be able to beat it, I'll tell you.
One of the things about head and neck cancers that people forget about, if you don't like going to the dentist because it's really invasive and it's really intimate and personal, mm-hmm. imagine this. Talk a little bit about what kind of violation that must have felt like for you.
Well, I think the fear alone itself was a major violation because you know I looked at my life as a snow globe. It's a beautiful picture until you shake it up and everything's going, and eventually it just settles back down. And so that's how I took a perspective on it. It was debilitating. It was painful. It was very intrusive. They put me in a mask with my face pinned down upwards. I couldn't see anything. All I could hear was clicks and see a laser. That was 7 days a week for about 20 minutes.
Wow.
And that went on for 7 weeks. The chemo itself was debilitating in all itself. The chemo itself could have killed me. However, I had good doctors and truthfully, the grace of God to save me.
This is going to sound like a funny question or maybe even a crazy question, but what good things came out of this diagnosis for you? And was there anything that was so positive you couldn't have imagined that anything positive could come out of it?
That's a great question. That's an emotional, deep question that people ask. And I do apologize if you see a little twinge in my voice, but I'll tell you this. It made me realize how important my family is. It made me how important it is for my friends, people like you and people I know. It's important for people to know that it changed me. It changed me completely. It made me understand how valuable life truly is. You know, my wife said the other day, I think you're going through a midlife crisis. I won't be here to be 101, I doubt it. But at 51, it's a blessing to be here. It just completely made me appreciate every little thing, the flowers, the trees, the conversations, food, you know, just everything that's sustaining life for us. I'm appreciative of it. I truly am.
Did your treatment and your cancer impact or change your ability to taste and enjoy food? How did it shift or change your sensory perceptions of the work you do as a professional chef?
Well, during that period of chemo, everything tastes like a spoon. It tastes like metal. It's very metallic.
And then there was because of the drugs and the medicines.
Absolutely. It just numbs everything. And at one point, I had a feeding tube. And the feeding tube, that was one of the most, as you were asking about, intrusive. It was very intrusive because it was...
They're not pumping foie gras through that, are they?
No, they're not. And it didn't have a nice apricot chutney with it, with a, you know, with a nice brochette or something. But, you know,
My friend Buck in the studio with us here is nodding and smiling because it's like, I think we've all had the similar experience.
Yes, we have. And it's I'm relating to it as he speaks. It's a similar process. Exactly the same, actually.
It's good to be around somebody who understands. And I think with what I've learned so far through this journey is that I need to tell people about not only my circle of my faith, but with my family and my friends, the doctors, everybody that saved my life, people need to know about that. They need to know how important it is, but they also need to know that you can survive and there is life after it, because networking is important. That's why I'm here, because when we started talking about this, I'm so glad to meet you, because now I have another outlet for pain. But you have to talk about it. You can't be silent on the word cancer.
How, I'm going to open this up to invite Buck into the conversation. Absolutely. My friend Buck Garrett's a longtime businessman and a musician and entrepreneur and a cancer survivor as well. And I'm going to ask this question of both of you. How is cancer an analogy for anything in life, but especially business? Because if we're business people, oftentimes we'll think of our professional lives in those life and death extremes. And we put everything we have into it. And we want to do as well as we can possibly do. And we don't want to limit our dreams, and we want to achieve and live up to our potential. And when something comes in to cause us existential crisis in any part of our life, I think we learn challenging survival skills for every part of our life. Will you each talk about that?
Well, in my case, I was an entrepreneur for nearly 20 years. I ran my own business. It exceeded $2 million in sales, and I was the only employee. So I myself was dealing with about $250,000 in cash a month. Well, not cash, but receipts a month and all that. In my case, when the financial crisis of 2008 happened, that took my business down. That's another kind of cancer. You don't have anything to do with it. You're just doing your own business.
It just hits you.
It just hits you. It comes out of the blue. Well, I don't know if you're paying attention to the financial situation at the time. I don't know, but it hits you and it takes you down. And you have to figure out how to survive that.
Absolutely.
So that is, I don't know if that really helped me later on when I got the cancer I had. Because that's more personal. You can deflect the, it's somebody else's thing, they did it to me, or that kind of thing, and then you have to move on, figure out what you're going to do next. But when it's personal like that, it's something that's inside you that you can't control, that's a whole different thing.
Did you ever call yourself or think of yourself as a victim of cancer or cancer victim?
No, never, no. It's just... It hits you like a brick, and it overwhelms you.
It's by far, you know, going through life, you hear a lot of things when you're growing up, your parents about right and wrong and up and down. In this case, it is a total. It was. I was blindsided by it. It is a life changer because when I have cancer, I couldn't work. I'm the provider. I'm the father. I'm the husband. I'm supposed to take care of my family. That alone, taking your pride from you, was half my battle, was trying to keep my family together.
And that's your identity.
You know, absolutely. And then my second identity would be my career. With being pulled out of the circuit for 3 years and losing, you know, the networking and not being part of it, it was financially struggling for me. There's nothing coming in. There was, you know, disability and Social Security, but it paid very minimal, with access barely covering. And that's another thing that we need to eventually talk about sometime is where the health coverage on this thing is. It's big business, cancer is.
Yeah.
And I was going through this and I was questioning everything. You know, why am I being charged for this? And is it necessary? And how much is it? And I wasn't paying for it. And by the grace of God, I was given the angels that helped me through this. And I truly believe that it changed me completely, as you say. It's a smack in the face, and it's a reality. You know, in this case, sometimes it's life or death.
Yes.
How is being in Tucson impactful to your cancer journey?
Well, I have family here. That's impacted. In what way do you mean, if you don't mind me? How would it be?
Well, I didn't want to limit it. But I think of Tucson as a really healing, restorative place that has really powerful vibration and energy, in addition to having extraordinary scientific, cutting-edge, vanguard healthcare.
Absolutely.
So you get, in some sense, the best of both worlds. I know that medical tourism is a huge industry for Southern Arizona, not only luring people from South and Central America and Mexico, but from around the world. There's a lot to be said for coming here to heal. It was certainly one of the things that I responded to when I was relocating here from the East Coast in the early 1990s. When you get here, I think you either see it and understand that there's a gentle, healing, restorative vibe, and it colors every bit of business we do. It informs who we are. It informs how we live. Mm-hmm. It's more relaxed. It's less high powered. It's, you know, many of the things that we look to bigger cities not too far away, Los Angeles, San Diego, Phoenix, Scottsdale. When we look at the bigger cities not too far away, they've got all that in spades. Mm-hmm. But what do we have? Why do people come to the desert? Why do we have Canyon Ranch and Miraval spas, two of the best spas in the world, with all of that healing energy?
That's funny. That's funny you bring that up, because a lot of people are coming here for that. I was born and raised here.
Oh.
So I was born and raised in Tucson, Arizona. I've seen it from Speedway being one way. Now you've got five lanes going north and south.
So you probably remember when Pass Swan was a dirt road.
Absolutely. You know, the drive-ins, you know, and the funny thing is I've seen it grow, but I've often wondered, you know, what is the draw of the desert? You know, some people are coming here, they want to see the wildlife. Do they want to see, people come here for their healing purposes for arthritis. They come back here from the cold, and they're told to come out here into the desert. It has grown, it has changed, but I think it's changed for the better, because you have so many cultures that are here. You know, whether it's the south side, east side, west side, you've got
mountains on four sides.
Absolutely,
one of the second largest underground aquifer in the western United States is under Tubac, Arizona, which is sort of the heart of the Sonoran region. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good reasons. You know, people talk about Sedona, mm-hmm, and Flagstaff. I love that Buck's smiling and nodding.
Yeah. He's like, yep.
This is the best thing.
Well, you have to, if you haven't seen it, first of all, if you haven't seen the high Sonoran desert, you haven't seen the sunsets, you haven't witnessed the wildlife. People don't think of wildlife in the desert, but Jennifer's been to my place. It's very modest, but where it is, we're surrounded by wildlife. It's serenity. And so back to the question about, does the area help you heal? In my case, yes. The place I live, especially, is so peaceful and quiet, and that gave me hope. So,
well, you know, and the other thing about that is that with me being born and raised here, at the time that I was ill or any kind of facilities or operations, things that I needed, I knew where to go for it. So what I like to do now is that people that are coming in, that come here for that, I'm trying to, give them an opportunity for someone to help them, guide them through.
Right.
I'm volunteering at the cancer center, things like that. Any chance that I can get. But the one thing is I tell them, just look up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at the sky. Look how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm.
So you're listening to Friends in the Business with Jennifer English, and my guest is Chef Richard Tarrin and Buck Garrett. My two friends and myself, we're all cancer survivors. You're listening to us here on Tucson Business Radio X. And for all of you who are going through challenges, whether they're business challenges or health challenges, we're going to tie this all together, because our friends in the business, our theme today may be better, but it's also about survival. So I'm going to turn to my guests and imagine that they're in the business of survival here in Tucson, Arizona, and ask them for some ideas, some tips, and some tactics for surviving anything in the desert in Tucson, maybe in business, maybe in your healthcare. What are some key learnings that you have learned and earned the hard way that you can share with the listeners that may be going through a challenge on their own?
Well, the cancer thing struck me in 2018, and that ended me. Like what you were saying, it, as far as I knew then, I was the diagnosis was that I had only a short term to live. So to survive it and being told that you're not going to live. So you're going along in your activities, and then one day this comes along and strikes you down. The physical pain was intense. And then in my case, the kind of cancer I had, it eliminated certain functions. Let's go there. So your life as you knew it, your abilities as you knew them, were over. And then you're also told on top of it that you aren't going to survive anyway, no matter what you do or what they do. So what do you do in a situation like that? What is the next step? What? How does friends?
How do you even take a next step?
Exactly. What are friends and family supposed to think? How do they help? And I had a lot of advice from a lot of people, a lot of great people.
Well, it's okay.
Because you're a loved and blessed human being, you were able to receive this information with grace. But the one thing I've learned about you in the time that I've known you, as difficult as that moment of existential crisis is, I don't know that you ever bought into it. I don't think you ever owned it.
Well,
I don't think you ever gave your life to that diagnosis.
No. And all the folks around me talked to me like that, about that, in that way. They all do that. That's a great thing. But you have to deal with it yourself, as you know. You have to deal with it. You have to come to grips with it yourself. You can sit and cry about it all you want, but that doesn't do a damn thing.
Mm-mm.
So you have to have a focus. You have to come up with a game plan. You have to suck it up. What it comes down to is you have to suck it up personally, and you have to figure out if there's anything you can do first. And that, in my case, required a lot of research, but is there something I can do? And then what could that be? And can I participate in that? Can I do it? Can I help myself? If other people can't help me, who's left? So in my case, my decision was I got to do it because everybody's telling me there's no way out.
You got to fight. You got to fight.
There's no way.
And talking about survival, growing up in Tucson, I grew up on the south side of Tucson. It was kind of tough back in the day. You know, you either fought or you didn't. Yeah. And
went to Sunnyside, right?
I graduated from Sunnyside High School.
Blue Devil.
Blue Devil all the way. We have an awesome wrestling team. You know, the point is that I had to survive that. And coming from a multicultural family of color, there was still a lot of racism going on, and my mom had married into a relationship that the neighborhood didn't approve of. We saw no color. We grew up with eight of us, and we survived. We took care of each other. And I think that's, you know, leads into, with the cancer surviving, it basically said, you know, you've got an 80 to 100% chance of beating this. That's what they gave me.
Wow.
I said, really? They said, you're one click away from not being able to say that, but I'm saying that to you. And I put it in perspective. You know, every day you leave your house, you walk out the door, it's a 50-50 chance of we're coming home. We don't think about it. We don't want to think about it. But the reality is there, 50-50. So if you're giving me an 80 to 100% chance, I got to fight. And then I looked at my family, and I have to fight, Jennifer, Buck. I had to fight for them. We're all going to pass someday. We know that. We've accepted that. We don't want to hear it, but it's going to happen. And when it's in your face, the survival mode goes into, truthfully, I was more worried about my family. You know, I never gave up. They never gave up. But I'll tell you truthfully, my wife went through cancer with me. She was there every moment of the day. And I fear for the people that don't have that kind of support. And there's a lot of people that don't. And I say that if you don't have that kind of support, we need to get it to you, because it's a lot mental. It's tough on everybody.
It's tough on everybody. And I'm going to ask each of you, because neither of you knew me during that. Well, you knew me a little bit because I was here.
Yep.
But then I went back east to get treated.
I didn't know that you were being treated.
But you didn't.
Yeah, there you go.
I need your help. How do we explain to people that are listening to us about what it means to live with the kind of organic, really deep gratitude that comes with the gift of every day once you've survived cancer?
Well, that's a great question too. That really is. For me, I would point out that one of the treatments I had was, and I still have it. I got it this morning, as a matter of fact. There's this drug they give you for prostate cancer. It's a monthly injection of a female hormone. And that is the same drug that they use to castrate men for sexual misconduct, or whatever you want to call it. Same thing. And the side effects of that are what a woman goes through with an extreme menopausal issue, and it doesn't end. So is the emotional side effects are horrible. But what I've done with that is channel that into music. And so when I play music now, it's a whole different world. And I've used that to...
It's some of the most powerful music I've ever heard in my entire life. It's enchanting. It's haunting. It's soulful. And it's indescribable because it just doesn't sound like anyone or anything else.
And it's a weird thing, too, in a way, because I play harmonica, but it's... you'd have to hear it, I guess, but it's...
Otherworldly.
Yeah, it's emotional. Let's put it that way. It's how
it's healing too, though.
It's how I cry.
Exactly. And you know what? It's okay to cry. It truly is. And I learned that. I learned that early on from my parents, that don't ever be afraid to cry. Sometimes in this world, you know, you take a beating for crying, but crying is true emotion. And in cancer, there's a lot of crying, and there's a lot of rejoicing in all different ways, even through hard times. But the question you asked was, you know, to the core of what it does to you, mentally it tore me down. It made me think that I was unworthy of anything. And here I am, I've been putting in a lot of years to become the chef that I wanted to be and that everybody wanted me to be. And that's, I was trying to appease, you know, I took care of a lot of families over the years. And in some cases, I might have neglected mine. And then when, now.
We've heard how cancer changed Buck Garrett's music. On the other side of this break, we're going to come back and we're going to ask the chef how cancer has changed and impacted his food, his cuisine, and his philosophy of flavor, hospitality, and conviviality. If it has. It's kind of hard to imagine that it hasn't. You're listening to Friends in the Business with Jennifer English. We'll be right back on Business Talk Radio X, Tucson Business Radio X.
I'm Sabrina Rigas from the Urban Grove in Tucson, Arizona. You are listening to Friends in the Business with my friend, Jennifer English.
Welcome back to Friends in the Business with Jennifer English, proudly brought to you by the 49er Golf and Country Club, featuring the Rincon Mountain Grill, where Chef Macca and her crew do an extraordinary job of bringing the taste of this region to life. The hospitality and conviviality are unrivaled on the east side of town, and we hope that you get the chance to join us there soon for one of our listener events. In the studio with me today is Buck Garrett, my dear friend and musician, who also is a cancer survivor. He and I have shared that experience, but I have to tell you, I don't think it has anything to do with the reason we're friends. I think it's just an incidental part of our friendship, and I'm really proud to have him here in the studio with us today on our first show of the new year, our first show of the new decade, where we are celebrating not only healing and wellness, but the sense that when you are diagnosed with any challenge in life, how you can summon, whether it's your health or your business, survivor mode. Also joining me today is my good friend. Chef Richard Tarrant is someone who's been in town a long, long time. For 30 years, he's been in some of the most extraordinary hospitality organizations and operations in the city. If you have lived here for any amount of time, I know you've eaten his food, and I know you've enjoyed his food, even if you didn't know that he was the one that was making it. I welcome him back.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So we were in the break teasing. We've learned how, as a musician, a cancer diagnosis, the process and journey of healing and surviving has changed Buck Garrett as a musician and actually changed his music. How has your experience of challenge changed who you are as a chef and as someone who welcomes guests with hospitality to cultivate conviviality? How has it changed?
I love that. I love that. It's changed quite a bit. The basics have never changed. You know, hospitality, there are certain criteria that you do and that you manage and stay consistent with the program. Cooking in the same sense, there's a lot of different types of cuisines in this town. Back when I started, we had a lot more fine dining, tableside. We had the Palomino restaurant. We had the Tack Room. We had Charles. We had all those kind of old school type restaurants.
VMO Club?
Yep. Yeah, we've gone away from all that now. And a lot of it for the fire code. You're not allowed to do open flame in restaurants. But
they do at Silver Saddle.
Yeah, I bet they do. They've done everything. They've been there forever. They're, you know, they
35 years with the best mesquite pit I know.
Absolutely. You know, the basics have never changed, you know, to get the end quality product. But what has changed is when you're coming out of this kind of horrible chemo and chemicals and pills and medications. I have a tub at home that I could show you. It would scare you how many pills I had to take just to keep me alive.
How much trust do you have to summon to turn yourself over and surrender to the process of the wellness industry, the medical industry?
Quite a bit, actually, because we don't know. We don't know the outcome. So all we're used to knowing is if you have a headache, you can take something. If you need something, you can go get it. In this case, we're not sure if we can get that taken care of, you know?
That's exactly right. And especially if you're told, we really can't help you long term. We can help you a little bit, maybe you can keep you around for a while, but long term, this is going to get you. So then when you process that, how do you take that home to your family? Mm-hmm. You know?
I've got kids, you know. I've got to provide them. Those are my babies. You know, they're my Billy Lids. They're the ones that I have to make sure that at least let me get them to go where they're going to go, and then I can go. I couldn't do it. But as far as changing in my cuisine, a lot of the places I have aren't really understanding of their concern is not they're not acclimated to being just taking care of wellness. It's more of just putting the masses out, fine dining, you know, downtown.
Well, if you're a big operation and you have to do 200, 300, 500, 800 covers a day in all forms,
which we do,
you have to think differently.
Absolutely.
Than if you just, but it's probably as challenging as feeding two kids if you're a single mom with a bad diagnosis.
It was very challenging. The biggest part of cuisine when you've been diagnosed is now what do I put in my body? What am I going to do from this point on? Because I put so much horrible stuff into my body. Good stuff, I thought. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are in the kitchen that could easily. In my case, I believe that the doctors had never seen this particular cancer, and they derived it from a raw food-borne illness.
Wow.
I ingested it. So whether back in the day, at any time, it stayed rogue in my body. We had tartar. We had ahi tuna, which comes out of the ocean, has many viruses in the ocean. I have a friend of mine who was diagnosed with cancer who got hit in the side of the head with a wave, went in his ear, and a virus got into his head, and he had head cancer.
Wow.
So viruses are everywhere. It's very important that you
watch. And viruses can lead to cancer.
And this, in my case, it did. Absolutely, it did. And that's why it was so rare that I had doctors flying from all over the country just to see me and say, wow, we've never seen this. Then when I beat it, we beat it. I say we. That's my God and my family and my friends and the doctors. I'm the poster boy there. And it wasn't the kind of poster boy. I'm used to being in brochures or wanting to be the chef of the year or something like that in a competition to be a winner. In this case, it was, you're the poster boy. This is the first we've ever seen in the world. So
I don't know if that's a prize you want to win, though.
I don't.
You want to survive it, but not be a participant.
How do you make peace with that thing you're called to become and to be the reluctant hero in the story of? I mean, sort of each of you have told me a version of that today while we're sitting at the table here.
Yeah.
It's come at a great cost. You've had substantial losses of things that were dear to you. You have changed. How do you own and make peace with that new mission?
I have a new mission, but I haven't made peace. I'm still arguing with myself or missing things, let's say that, that I could do before, that I can't do now, and never will be able to again. I haven't made peace with that. I haven't accepted that. Maybe it's just me being stubborn. Maybe that's one of the reasons I'm fighting the way I'm fighting. I don't know. Or my body's fighting the way it's fighting. I don't know that. You know, it could be attitude. I'm just a stubborn, you know, person. I was going to use, I can't maybe use that term, but, and I'm not ready to go yet. So that's maybe one way to look at it. But I have not made peace with what I can't do. And now what I'm trying to do, now that I'm told that I'm a survivor and this is in remission and you don't have to worry about it anymore and now you're going to live and all that good stuff. Now I'm trying to tick off what I now might be able to do again. And so that's where I'm trying to go now.
So one of the things that I hear is be grateful for what you are. Be grateful for what you have, not for what you don't have.
Absolutely. I actually, in listening with Buck here, the first thing I thought about at this point in my life is that I gave it to God. I gave it to my higher power. It was a tough battle. And I have a whole testimonial that I'm writing down into music as well. I'm a singer, but writing it down so that someone... I've told my story in men's groups. I go to a Christian men's group. I really think that impact of stories like that, it changed me to the point where I was mad at myself like you are. You know, I was mad. I can't do certain things. I feel this way in the morning. I'm not 100% right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm grinding in a kitchen and then I go home and I fall apart. Mm-hmm. I think that the one thing that I can say is that I love being alive more than I've ever loved it. When you get close to something like that, I laid there and looked at a ceiling fan and I wrote a song called God's Got My Back. And it was just the most horrible time in my life, which now here I am sitting talking about the future. And the cool thing about food is it's very instrumental to the body's success. It truthfully is. And that's what I've been taking a look at. For the future, I'd like to do something in a wellness myself to help people. But I think in Buck's case, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions. There's some anger there. I think you're more than welcome to come with me sometime, and I'd love to hang out with you and come to our group and hang out with you and learn about you. But you know, I'm extending that I'm here for you because a lot of people don't know what we go through unless you say something. And a lot of times we're very reserved about that.
One thing I hear you saying is that food is so nutritionally important to our bodies. And the music that Buck makes and that you make is food for the spirit.
That's right.
And so in that, something very similar to how you do what you do and what you do. One of the things that strikes me about both of you is this idea that if you've come this far in your survival and there's anything that doesn't feel comfortable, if there's something that's still a struggle, is it possible that we are called to do and be even more than we can dream? And that when we are doing that next level thing that comes by virtue of surviving what we've done, it won't be nearly as challenging as trying to fit the old parts that we still have hung on to, even though we've let go of a lot of those old parts. Mm-hmm. What if we let go of all the old parts, surrender everything, and see what comes next?
I think that's where I'm about at. I think I've come to a road in my career, in my life. I'm still young enough. I want to use the years of experience that I've learned, the networking, the people that I've learned and met from. I've lost a few chefs over the years from cancer. So it's very personal to me. That I had to go.
Friends,
to
mutual friends of both of ours.
Absolutely. That really, really.
We ran the list not too long ago and we were like, wow.
Yeah. And it made me upset the fact that, you know, it's out there. And my old life is gone. I gave it up. I had to. But there are things that I want to accomplish while I'm still here. And a big part of it is to help people. I want someone to go, wow, man, that meant a lot to me that he just said little stuff. You know?
If I can add, I had a recent physical, my regular family physician, and he asked me what I thought was a profound question. He said, what makes you happy? What do you do with yourself? How are you dealing with this? And my only answer is, I'm on a mission to help other people.
Yeah.
And that's going to help you. That you're giving kind to that. I'm in awe of you, Buck. I just met you. I'm already impressed. And the impression comes from being a humble man. You know, we're not out to hurt anybody. We never were. We were just trying to take care of our families and ourselves. You know, I played hard back in the day. I was in a rock band. I did my thing. Mm-hmm. But now I want to be a rock star in a different way. And that's about in life. Just I want to live.
I want to still be a rock star the other way, too. But
you are a rock star. Well, that's the thing.
That's what I'm hearing.
You know, what we're going to do is make sure that we have a link to Buck's music on this just below the listen page that you're on right now to be listening to Tucson Business Radio X. This is Friends in the Business with Jennifer English, brought to you by our good friends at the 49er Golf and Country Club and the spectacular Rincon Mountain Grill. I want to use the analogy of food because James Beard, the father of American gastronomy, said that food unites us. I believe that to be true. The wisdom in that statement comes from the fact that as human beings, we all need the things, not only the nutritional things that food provides us, but the cultural richness of time around the table like we're sharing today together here, and the connection through generations that family recipes provide, the hospitality and conviviality that come from going to your favorite restaurants or to welcoming guests in your home. Understanding that that food and the experience of entertaining and dining and eating and sharing gives us so incredibly much of the richness in our lives. I'm going to turn to each of you for a bit of advice about how in Tucson, Arizona in particular, how on Tucson Business Radio X, people that are either living here or visiting here that want to know more about what kind of place Tucson is, recently named one of the fastest growing real estate and communities in the country for 2020. It just came out in the last day. How can somebody, Buck, get the most out of Tucson from this new enlightened vantage point of survival that you're in?
I think if you came here for the first time, you would begin to see a relatively new city. Although Tucson's been around a long time, I've traveled here way back. So I saw it when it was little, more like a old West Town kind of thing, where this is where the cowboys hang out.
Old Tucson.
Let's go out here and see these guys, and so that's, and it was like a tourist thing.
Because we're more than six shooters and T-bone steaks.
Yeah. So, you know, although I love horses and I rode horses my whole life too, pretty much. It's not that, only that, let's just say. The environment here is a peaceful, quiet, beautiful landscape. It has its own kind of critters all over that some are dangerous and some are interesting, I would say, like what's a javelina, if you don't know what those are.
Yeah, we may not have hurricanes, earthquakes, and tornadoes, but we've got rattlesnakes, right, and scorpions, so, and other things.
And you better be paying attention.
That's right.
So yeah, but it's unique that way. I've lived at the ocean, I lived at the beach, I lived at the lake, suburbia, lived in the city, traveled to New York, I've traveled all over the country, I've been to every state in the United States. This is it's its own serenity. It's almost beyond description because it's become emotional.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm glad you're here. And again,
and you're a native.
Being born and raised here, I know no other. I don't want any other. And even after that, I'm sick now, I've been wooed out. You know, we want you over here in New Mexico and Colorado. We'd like you. This is my home. This is where I'm from, you know. And if you're asking about people coming here and, you know, what's going to draw them?
How do you get the best and the most out of Tucson?
You've got to get mixed in with the culture. You've got to let your defenses down if you're not into Asian cuisine, or if you're not into, you know, if you drive down 22nd Street, I think there's 25 Mexican restaurants all the way from east to the west. So people
You can stay on that one street and eat well.
Yeah, absolutely. One street. And so there's so many different types of foods and people here. Get involved in the mix, but also slow down and look at the saguaros.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rabbits. And it's afar. Look at the rattlesnake.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are just too hustle bustle anymore.
Yeah. One of the things that's great about a digital economy and a digital technology-driven economy is that you can do whatever you want, whenever you want, from wherever you want. And no longer are you pegged to having to miss the first blush of sunset or sunrise. No longer are you having to work through that glorious time that everyone else is enjoying and you're missing because you're working. I will say that among the things that make Tucson not like any other place on the planet, we're a city of gastronomy. For 4,000 years, people have been coming here, cultivating food. And for 4,000 years, you could not cultivate food and not be also cultivating conviviality, meaning you're celebrating with people that are growing the food with you. But you were also making medicine. You were growing culture. You were, in fact, creating a legacy. You couldn't have made food for 4,000 years and not come up with hospitality and all these other elements that make life rich. That's one of the things that UNESCO was looking at when they called and said, we've named Tucson an international UNESCO city of gastronomy.
Nice.
We're also a member of the Delice Network. Again, two international honors and distinctions born of the cultural richness of the cuisine of this region. There's a lot to be said for it. How do you, in the work that you do, wherever it is, bring the flavor philosophy of this region and this place to life?
Well, that's a great question. That is imperative to cuisine. You can buy, you know this, you're involved with spices and things like that. You can buy things that are pre-marketed and sold with a label on it, but you're never going to get anything as fresh as something coming out of the ground. You know, for instance, hatch green chilies are from New Mexico. You've got all kinds of different types of vegetation here that you can get. And if Tucson doesn't grow it, we have the sources to network to get it in here, but it's always got to be a fresh product.
Well, we've got something like an extraordinary percentage of the produce in North America flowing over the border in Nogales.
Absolutely.
So billions of dollars of the freshest produce in the world travel through our region.
Correct. And it's and the thing to remember about produce as well is that we're talking about viruses and things in food. Things are cleaned. You know, they're always pre-washed. Always make sure that you pre-wash all your stuff. It's
important. Even if it comes pre-washed, wash it again.
Absolutely. And then if you don't believe me, take a look at the water afterwards.
All right. Buck Garrett, I'm going to ask you. You and I do farmers markets together.
Yep.
And as compadres, I'm your comadre. You're my compadre. In the world of this region, we have a mission to eradicate pain.
Yes.
And I met you because you've invented something that you sell in the marketplace, in the farmers markets that Donna DeConcini runs for the Southern Arizona Animal Food Bank at the Five Points Farmers Markets. Talk a little bit about what you invented to, as a response to your cancer experience.
Well, I read and studied about CBD and how CBD was being used various ways to fight cancer, to various kinds of cancers. And I kept studying that and looking at that. I was, you know, like a lot of us back in the day, we smoked this and smoked that or whatever. But that was that. That was that kind of thing. As I looked into it, I realized that many people around, not only in America, but around the world, were already finding some benefit from what's called CBD now. So I thought, well, maybe that's a way. I don't have any other way, so maybe that's some kind of way.
And CBD is not marijuana.
No. So yes and no. THC, that's the thing that's regulated at the moment. Nationwide, still federal law prevents it. And then locally here in Arizona, we're still medical marijuana, not, you know, it's not
recreational.
It's not recreational yet. So, but CBD was legalized. Hemp growing was legalized January 1, 2019 at the federal level, part of the Farm Bill. that was signed into law January 1. Well, signed, became effective then. So based on that, I thought that that meant that I could grow hemp and find a way to extract that into something that would be a pain reliever. And that actually, I started that.
Honestly, and you make green goo.
Yeah, so I started that about 5 years before it was legal. And have been working on it and working on it and working on it.
And it eases your pain.
Yes, and so that took away when I was physically involved in some heavy labor, took away all the pain. And then at the evening, you rub it on your shoulder, back, whatever it is, and you can sleep sound and there's no pain. And in the morning, I get out of the shower, still do it, put it on wherever it hurts, and it don't hurt. So I knew that was something that benefited me. The question was, could I eat it? Because in my case, the only way that I could deal with the cancer that was inside me was that it had to be an edible. It had to be something that you consumed. Back to your point that you just made about food, growing something. So I'm growing something that I extract into a coconut oil. That's all it is, hemp and coconut oil. There's two components. And that, when you eat it, turns out that it deprives the cancer cells of oxygen.
Awesome.
And starves
great.
Them.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
good news.
It starves them, and it if you figure it out for yourself, that's another thing that I've been, and Jennifer knows this too, that we don't know all the answers yet. We're just at the very, very beginning of understanding some of this stuff, if you even want to use the word understanding. But right now we're taking this stuff, some of us around the country, around the world, for this issue, various kinds of cancers, various kinds of other ailments. There's 500 or 600 different things now that are on a list of what CBD can do for people. So,
Where can people find you? Because we're running out of time, and I don't want to leave without making sure everybody knows how to get in touch with each of you.
I don't have a website, and I haven't gone that far.
So they can come find me right here.
Yes, they can find you
on Tucson and Business Radio X. Just ask for Buck Garrett and the Green Goo.
Yeah.
And we'll be at the farmers markets, and you can find us on Facebook, because I know you're on Facebook.
Yes. You can just look me up on Facebook, Buck Garrett. That's one way. But the thing is, it's a ongoing thing where we're still learning, still studying. And we have more and more and more products, more different kinds of derivatives, more things that we need to know. I would love to see medical science for real finally get on the stick and merge that into not MMJ or not this, not that. All of it work together. Everybody come to a common understanding scientifically. Is there something here that can benefit us all? And let's figure it out.
I'm going to give you the last word, Chef.
Well, first off, thank you very much for having me. And it's good to meet all of you, Buck. I'm up at Lowe's Ventana, the Lodge Country Club. And I have an email, but I think they're getting a hold of you. It'd be easier until I get something set up. But I'd love to chat with anybody who has any questions.
This is Friends in the Business with Jennifer English. Thanking my guests, Chef Richard Tarrant, Buck Garrett. Check the link to Buck's music listed on this webpage right below. And we look forward to sharing more time again next visit around our table here in the studios of Tucson Business Radio X, brought to you by our good friends at the 49er Golf and Country Club and the Rincon Mountain Grill.
Thanks to the 49ers and the Rincon Grill. We trust you enjoyed Friends in the Business with Jennifer English.